This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Always a good idea to plug in your microphone. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And on the line with us is Joe Plensler. Joe is a retired 20-year veteran of the United States Marine Corps, former NRA member, as am I, former NRA member. Joe wrote a brilliant letter to the NRA, which our friend Jim Turr in New Mexico forwarded to us the other day, and wanted to get him on. Joe, welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks so much. How are you?
Thanks for joining us. What's happened to, you know, I mean, I joined the NRA probably 30 years ago when we were in Atlanta for a gun safety course and you know, went through the Georgia Police Academy. I had to learn how to use a weapon. But it doesn't seem today, I mean, back then that organization was sponsoring sporting events. It was sponsoring safety classes. I think they were offering insurance, as I recall. You know, their magazine was about, you know, hunting, and they sold, you know, camo stuff for deer hunter. I mean, it seems like a completely different group right now.
Yeah, it certainly has metamorphosized even during my lifetime. I mean, I'm 46 now. I remember starting shooting when I was a kid with my great uncle Ray and my dad. My great uncle Ray was a Korean War vet. And you're right. I mean, it seems like it was much more focused on, you know, shooting sports, safety, you know, Second Amendment protections. But I don't recognize the rhetoric I'm seeing coming out of this organization today. And it's really disappointing. And I think unfortunately, it's contributing to the polarization of America. It's not what we need.
Yeah, I think that was the point and brilliantly said of your letter to the NRA. It seems that the NRA has gone from being a membership organization. I mean, they still claim that they're a membership organization, that they've got all these thousands of members, but from being an organization that was focused on the needs of its members, let's say, to an organization that is focused on the needs of its donors, which would be the weapons manufacturers, and that money is a driving, and maybe, I don't know, maybe I'm imagining or projecting or something, but it seems to me that whole money as a driving force has caused an essential corruption of the moral position, you know, the safety position that the NRA used to have.
Sure.
Or are we just speculating here? I don't know.
Well, I don't know. I always try to follow the money, you know, to see people's real motivations. And, you know, when you take the king's shilling, you do the king's bidding. And, you know, I think looking at the membership association space, I mean, the funds are one thing. That keeps the lights on, the lobbying effort of putting money in politicians' campaigns. But the actual numbers is kind of like the political throw weight on the Hill. So when they can go out and say they have X many million members, then, you know, in every congressional district, then politicians seem to, pay attention to that. But the rhetoric coming out of there is just so divisive right now that, you know, it seems like they've almost picked a side, right? And they forget that there's a big population out there. There's a large population of gun owners. And I think even by the NRA's own estimates, there's something like 100 million gun owners in the United States. But only 5% of that are NRA members. So, you know, it's pretty clear that we don't need them to advocate for our Second Amendment rights, because that's not what they're doing anymore.
Yeah. So where do we go with this, Joe? I mean, I used to have these debates with I'm not sure if that they were even NRA surrogates, but, you know, people who were just, you know, gung-ho on everybody needs to have a gun all the time and, you know, open carry and this, that, and the other thing. And I'm not anti-gun. I mean, one of my brothers owns a bunch of weapons and has a shooting range in his backyard. And my wife and I go back to Michigan, and we spend the whole day with Steve and Tam out, you know, shooting target practice, you know. But, you know, I consider it a reasonable sport. You know, I'm a little concerned about all the lead dust, but that, you know, outside of that. And you know, I've always enjoyed shooting. I think that there's something going on in our society, in our culture, that seems to have to do with the you know, large number of guns out there. You know, if a gun is in a home, I think it's a fivefold increase in the probability of a suicide happening. We've got 30,000 children a year being shot, maimed, killed by guns. It's the we've got a serious problem in this country, and it doesn't seem to me like the organization that should be at the forefront of doing something about it. And frankly, I thought used to, you know, advocate gun safety is doing anything about it.
Right, right. No, and I think you're right. And I think what needs to happen is, especially in today's political climate, is that folks need to come to the center and work for the common good, right? So, you know, I think, you know, Heller affirmed individuals' right to keep arms, right? You know, the right. Heller amendment or Heller decision out of the Supreme Court. But even in the Second Amendment, it says a well-regulated militia, right? I mean, it's just, you know, and I think when you talk to common sense, everyday people about responsible ownership, safe homes and safe communities, you know, I think we need to focus on those three things and figure out where do our common interests, you know, as gun owners and as, you know, people who choose not to have own guns, where do those intersect and how can we work towards a common sense solution to it all? Because I think at the end of the day, you know, people that carry guns because they feel they need it for protection, okay, well, ultimately they're driving for, they'd like to live in a safe community, right?
Yeah.
And be safe in their homes. And I think, you know, all of us really want that. And when we achieve those conditions of responsible, accountable ownership, and safety in our homes and in our communities, we're all more free, right? When we can navigate our day unmolested by crime or violence. So I think that's a good thing.
Yeah, it makes perfect sense. In terms of practical application, you're right. The Second Amendment is one of the few places in the Constitution that has the word regulation in it, or regulated. Well-regulated militia, and I would argue that the Heller decision was wrongly, you know, decided. It was based on a logical contortion that was first promoted back in the 1950s that I don't think ever occurred to the founders or the framers of the Constitution. But that's a whole kind of separate discussion. The question, I guess, is what do we do? The thing that has always seemed to make sense to me, and I'd love to reality test this with you, you know, with a guy who's, you know, a 20-year Marine vet and former NRA member and familiar with guns. In the 1920s, maybe it was the teens, automobiles started getting big enough and fast enough that they were killing people. And, right. You know, by accident, but they were killing people. And so we decided to do something about it for the purpose of protecting society, for safety. And we came up with, you know, the whole idea of red, green, and yellow lights. We came up with stop signs. But most importantly, we came up with the idea that a car, because it is capable of killing a person, from the time it's manufactured until the time it's destroyed, has to be continuously registered with a government agency and a person who is the owner of record, a person or a company.
Right.
Number one, registration. Number two, you have to have liability insurance. It's not very expensive. It's not very comprehensive, but it's liability insurance. I find it totally bizarre that the kids at Newtown, if they had been plowed down by a drunk driver, if 20 kids had been run over by a drunk driver or their school bus had been run into by a drunk driver, GEICO would be paying their families $1 million apiece. Because sure. They were killed by an idiot with an AR-15, nobody gets a penny. What, you know, that right. Doesn't seem to make any sense to me. And number three, we licensed drivers by simply asking them to demonstrate proficiency. You must demonstrate to a representative of the state that you know how to drive a car in a way that's not going to kill people. And I don't see what's wrong with saying, you know, if you want to own a weapon, you have to demonstrate that you know how to use it. You have to have liability insurance and it has to be registered. This seems to me like the most common sense starting point. What are your thoughts? What's your starting point?
Yeah, no, I mean, that makes sense to me. You know, it is a dangerous thing if it's in the wrong hands. And I think it's like, you know, a tool like anything else, but certainly with the power to take life, I think comes great responsibility. So I think, you know, you can avoid a lot of death and injury just by having proper training and having responsible ownership. So for instance, in the military, we don't allow service members in the military to handle weapons until they become proficient on them, right? Through training under very close supervision. And, you know, we are taught in the military that we're responsible for that round that's shot out of the, you know, M16 or M9 or whatever weapon you're carrying at the time, you know, from the point of departure from the weapon all the way to the point of impact, right? So not just the target you're shooting at, but also what's behind it. And so, you know, we drill that into our young Marines and soldiers. And I know the military application is different than a civilian application, but, you know, I think the part about having shown proficiency, yeah, that's a reasonable thing, right? I mean, because here's the other thing too, and a lot of folks who are against that position seem to forget is that in extremists, you're going to do exactly what you train to do or what you fail to train to do, right? Because right. when your adrenaline starts, and I'm talking about a guy who's been in a gunfight and experienced this personally, you start reacting based on your training, and that takes over. And it takes a few seconds or a few minutes for your thinking part of your brain to catch up with everything else that's going on. Your flight or flight stimuli, and so. You read countless reports of police, who were involved in shootings, doing exactly what they trained to do, whether that was empty six rounds out of their revolvers and pick up the brass off the ground, in the middle of a firefight or take out the target. But, proper training, I think, is essential, yeah. At least demonstrated proficiencies.
And this should be a growth opportunity for the NRA.
Right.
You'd think.
Somebody's got to provide those classes. In fact, like in the state of Maryland now where I live, you actually have to, if you're not former law enforcement or former military or active duty, an active duty cop or law enforcement person, you do have to take a handgun class if you want to own a handgun in the state of Maryland. To me, that just makes sense because especially with handguns, it's so much easier to, the barrel's so much shorter, the turning radius is tighter and you really need to, it's almost, rifles are actually, in many ways, safer than...
Yeah, it's hard to do accidental damage with a rifle.
Right.
It's a heck of a lot easier.
It's been done.
Yeah,
it's
yeah. Done, oh, yeah, of course.
It's so much easier for inexperienced people to misuse a pistol and injure themselves or others.
Yeah, I think it's great. Joe Plenser, retired 20-year vet with the U.S. Marine Corps, now a former NRA member, wrote a brilliant book about this, a brilliant article, kind of a rebuttal to the NRA about this ad that they ran with Dana Loesch. Joe, thanks so much for being with us today.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's a great discussion. Thanks for having me on.
Good talking. Thank you. And it's nice to have a rational conversation about guns.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
We'll be back with your calls, my thoughts, and the news of the day right after this. Welcome back. Susan in Ontonagon, Michigan. Ontonagon? Am I saying that right?
Yes, you are.
Is that one of those towns up in the Upper Peninsula?
Yes, it is, a Porcupine Mountain.
I thought I'd heard it before. I'm not sure I've ever been there, but what a great name. It's got to be an old Indian name. So, Susan, what's
it
up?
Is. Well, my partner and I have been having this discussion for a few weeks, and we can't come up with an answer. We're getting nothing from the main media, and we're hoping you can help us. What we want to know is, how can a U.S. naval destroyer be hit by a cargo carrier and kill 7 sailors, and that's sort of the end of it? What happened?
Right. I guarantee you that's not the end of it, Susan. And, apparently somebody was asleep at the switch both on the U.S. Was it a destroyer or an aircraft carrier? I think it was a destroyer. On the destroyer and on the cargo ship.
How can that be? I mean, we have the most expensive defense program in the world.
Yep.
Don't have radar.
I know. And it's like, on your car now as an accessory, you can have in your car, that if you're going to hit another car, it stops you automatically or it beeps at you. You would think on a destroyer, they would have something that says, danger, Will Robinson, giant cargo ship approaching.
Right. And my partner has talked to someone who has been in the Navy, and they said there would have been so much protocol about this cargo ship approaching them and what to do, what to say, all
sure.
that, and nothing.
Yeah. No, there's rules on all that stuff. And, I think this happened either at 1 or 3 o'clock in the morning. It happened while everybody was asleep. And that's
right. And how many people are on a destroyer? I mean,
right. And the captain was asleep in his cabin at the moment of impact, which clearly tells me that whoever was on the bridge of this thing and should have been looking at the radar wasn't.
Right. And we saw on our computer, I'm assuming it's accurate, the path of the cargo carrier was coming right at the destroyer, went around it, turned around, came back and rammed it. I mean, if that can happen, do we have a defense program?
Yeah.
I mean, if I
Well, Susan, I mean, you know, that's all the bad news. I can virtually guarantee you. I have no inside information on this, but just common sense would indicate that the senior officers of this ship are in really big trouble right now, and that the Navy is doing an exhaustive examination of what happened and how to prevent it from happening again. This is humiliating to the United States Navy. They're not going to let this thing slide.
Okay, and I agree with what you just said, but that the media doesn't seem to be covering it at all or asking any questions.
Right.
That's a problem also.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I don't disagree, although the fact of the matter is that the Navy has just kind of shut up, and the company that owns the cargo ship is not saying anything because their lawyers are saying don't say anything. It's with the insurance companies now and all this kind of stuff. So, you know, we'll see where this goes. But every now and then you get this glimpse that this fancy, powerful, all-powerful international military machine of the United States is not quite as all-powerful as we thought. That human error is still a problem. That should inform, you know, our thinking even about our nuclear program. Susan, thank you for the call. Great to hear from you. We'll be right back. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. It is Anything Goes Summer here on this beautiful Tuesday afternoon. James in Dothan, Alabama. Hey, James, what's on your mind? Thanks for watching us on Free Speech TV. What's up?
Hey, Tom. It's good to hear you again, man. I live in Tallahassee now, but this is the same old James.
Okay.
What I want to talk to you about, Tom, I'm 72 years old this month, and during my youth, 50 years ago almost, I spent about 6 or 7 years in the debit insurance business, Tom.
Okay.
And back during that time, you had to take a test in each state. The test had 100 questions on it.
Hang on just a second. What kind of insurance is this, James?
Well, insurance is insurance. This was, they called it debit insurance. That's where you went out and sold it and went back and collected.
Okay.
So the other words, a debit, Tom, is just an area that an insurance agent works. It's no different from no other insurance, but you were limited to what you really could sell.
I see. Okay.
And it was mostly for low-income black people. But at that time, Tom, I had insurance license in Alabama and Florida first, and then I moved to Alabama briefly. Back during that time, the test, Tom, was identical almost. It had 100 questions on it, and they gave you a prep book. And it took you 6 months, but you passed that test.
So this is the test to become an insurance agent, a salesperson.
Right.
I get it. Okay.
Okay. Now, Tom, those tests was almost mirrors of each other. Two of the questions on there that I never will forget. The first question was, what is insurance? Now, anybody can come up with a definition of insurance. The second question on that test was, what is the purpose of insurance?
Right. It's to distribute risk over a broad population, isn't it?
The risk, you got it. You want I guarantee you, Tom. Now, here's the definition. The purpose of insurance is to take the risk of one Tom Hartman and spread the cost of that risk across thousands of other people so it would be low to Tom Hartman.
Right. Right.
90% of the politicians in Washington right now, like Ryan and O'Connell, they are not using that principle.
You're right.
If you do not use what they call that immortality table, like insurance companies were doing 300 or 400 years ago, you would never come up with a plan that's equitable to everybody.
Yeah.
So what they're doing, insurance companies know this, they hope the politicians don't get up to it.
Yeah.
I can sit down right now, Tom, and I can take that immortality table and I can draw up an insurance program for anybody. You got to have that. Now, if you go back and talk about that $40 million they said was uninsured, well, they might have been uninsured, but they could go to a free hospital back then. But if you took that same $40 million, Tom, and put that same $40 million in one insurance group and use that immortality table, I will guarantee you life insurance and health insurance would cost each one of them about $40 a month, and the insurance company still can make money.
Yeah, this is what we did with Medicare, James. This is what we did with Medicare. We took all the elderly people who were very, very expensive and the insurance companies didn't want them, and we covered all of them, which reduced the cost for everybody. Brilliant point, James. Thank you so much for the call and for making it.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-808-9925.
Coming up on the news or the break here at the bottom of the hour, it's 28 minutes past the hour. We'll be back with more of your calls, my thoughts, and the news of the day right after this.
All the important stories we cover and the issues we care about are at HartmanReport.com. Members of our community can comment and join the conversation.
I think Bob Peterson has the best tweet of the day, apropos of the kind of the whole arc of our show today. He says, robot hookers? Can robot Republicans be far behind? Maybe they're already here, right? It's not lizard people, it's robots. I don't know. I'm a little concerned about the lizard people. Anyway, Fred in Los Angeles. Hey, Fred, what's on? Thanks for watching us on YouTube, Fred. What's on your mind?
Well, you've been all over the place. And unfortunately for your screener, I'm going to have to change up what I was going to talk about. What I'm worried about is I think the Democrats are going to get rolled. They're saying that now that they might be willing to work with Mitch McConnell on some kind of reasonable replacement or...
Which Democrats said that they'd work with Mitch McConnell? I've not heard any.
Well, I've heard this reported.
Well, Mitch McConnell is saying that. He's threatening the Republicans that, you know, if you guys don't fall into line, I'm going to go talk to some Democrats, and maybe he'll find one or two, but, you know, just, you know, pulling in Joe Manchin and saying, aha, here's a Democrat, now we've got a bipartisan bill. I don't think anybody's going to buy that.
What I'm worried about is if he's able to take anything to committee to what's the term when they resolve between
reconciliation?
Yeah, Mitch McConnell will roll whoever he finds, and they're going to end up with the most draconian bill they could get.
Yeah, I think that that's entirely possible. You know, the good news is that it's extremely unlikely. I mean, this Republican attempt to repeal an $800 billion tax on extremely wealthy people. You've got to make at least $250,000 in capital gains before your capital gains tax goes from 20% to 23.8%. You know, before that new tax that helps fund Obamacare and Medicaid kicks in. So, you know, but the very, very wealthy finance much of the political activity in the Republican Party. I would say probably most of it. In fact, probably the vast majority of it. And so they are not going to bite the hand that feeds them. They are going to go with that. But the good news is that most people in America have figured out what a scam this is. And it's insanely unpopular. If the Republicans are in a position where if they push through the repeal of Obamacare, they're going to be destroyed in the next two elections. And if they don't push through the repeal of Obamacare, they're going to be destroyed in the next two elections because they're going to lose their base. Either they're going to have Democrats hating them or they're going to lose their base. And the reason for the whole thing is because Republicans and particularly right-wing media, Fox News and right-wing hate radio, and Donald Trump have been lying to Americans about what is in Obamacare. You know, it was Sarah Palin. Oh, you got death panels. It was, you know, it's going to be a death spiral. It's going to jack everybody's taxes up. You're going to lose your freedom. All that nonsense that came out of the Tea Party and the Koch brothers and everything else. They were, by and large, all lies. And now they've got, and so, you know, they got everybody all cranked up. Oh, my God, this thing is terrible. It's socialism. It's worse than socialism. It's the end of the republic. We'll repeal it. Don't worry. We're going to save you. Okay, we'll vote for you. And now they're stuck with, you know, having promised to do away with this straw man. What they promised to repeal was something that doesn't even exist. The Obamacare that the Republicans said that they were going to repeal is a cartoon character of Obamacare. And I mean, if anything, Obamacare is the Republican health care plan. It's a Romney care. It's Nixon care. It's Heritage Foundation care. So, you know, the Republicans find themselves in this terrible position because they lied to everybody and their base believed their lies. And now they can't go back to their base and say, well, we just lied to you for the last 6 years. So what are they going to do?
Well, with voter ID and gerrymandering or whatever, I don't think they have to, the Republicans have to worry very much.
Well, that's their plan. But, you know, again, the Republicans tend to overplay their hands once they have power. They don't handle power really well. And now you've got this so-called voter fraud commission or voter integrity commission or whatever it is. And you know, going full tilt boogie. And it's in fact, it's everybody's getting sworn in tomorrow, which is why people are saying, you know, let the attorney generals of New Hampshire and Maine know, who are both Democrats, know that they should not be part of this commission. They are providing, you know, a cover to the Republicans for what is entirely a partisan effort. Fred, excellent points all. I got to move along. But thank you for the call, Fred. Great to hear from you. Oh, one story I wanted to share with you. This is just since 2010. And this is from the Pew Research Center. In fact, it's the report that I have in my hand is not even a story about the story. It's the actual report itself from Pew. In 2010, 58% of Republicans thought that having a college education was a good thing. In 2012, it was 56% of Republicans. In 2015, it was 56% of Republicans thought having a college education was a good thing. And then Donald Trump got elected. And in 2017, only 36%, one third, a little more than one third of Republicans think that it's a good thing that people go to college. The vast majority of Republicans think it's a bad thing that people go to college. Among Democrats, it's gone from 65% support for college in 2010 to 72% support for college today. So this is not, you know, America has decided that college is a bad thing. This is that 20% or 25% of the American population that identifies as Republican has decided that college is a good thing. How can you have a functioning small d democracy and a small r republic? How can you have a functioning nation when you don't believe in education or science? This is a crisis for this country. This embrace by the Republican Party on behalf of petrobillionaires who don't want people to know that their product is killing our planet. And that's really what this boils down to, is you've got a bunch of petrobillionaires, people who made a fortune on fossil fuels, who have bought complete ownership and control of the Republican Party. And they have convinced people that science is a bad thing, and that the things associated with science, like education, are bad things. And they celebrate know-nothingness. This is like the Order of the Star-Spangled Banner in 1890 in Boston. A political party called the Order of the Star-Spangled Banner was referred to, you can Google them, they referred to as the Know-Nothing Society, because it was a secret society with a secret handshake, and when they would meet each other, they would do the handshake, and they would say, "I know nothing," and that was their way of saying, "I'm one of us." And it was a group of Protestant conservatives who took over the state of Massachusetts and hated the Catholics, the Irish Catholics specifically, who were the majority population in Boston. And in the 1890s, Horace Mann went to them and said, "Hey, we can break the back of the Catholics with public education." It's a whole other story. It's in my book, Tom Hartman's Complete Guide to ADHD. But this is, in my understanding of American history, this is arguably only the second time in the history of the United States that being stupid, that knowing nothing, was considered a political virtue. It just boggles my mind. Scott, Alameda, California. Hey, Scott, what's on your mind today?
Yeah, you mentioned the looting of the antiquities at the tail end of the 2003 invasion in Iraq.
Yes.
I haven't heard anybody put this together, but Hobby Lobby just got fined $3 million for purchasing smuggled Iraqi antiquities for their new Bible Museum in Washington, D.C.
Yep.
And they got busted for basically wire transfers to anonymous accounts that could possibly be linked to ISIS fighters. You know, who knows who ISIS fighters are, right. But that's another story. They also mislabeled the crates. They said they were coming from Turkey, so it was an obvious attempt to
smuggle.
So it's fraud, you know. But nobody's put it together because, you know, there were tens of thousands of items looted from that museum. And I remember the day that report came out in late, well, it was 2003, it must have been, you know, summer of 2003, late 2003, and talking about it. And you mentioned what Donald Rumsfeld's comments were. But I haven't heard anybody put these two things together because it reminds me, you know, everybody imagines the horror of this catastrophe, Donald Trump and everything, and the self-dealing, you know, that antiquities thing. Who knows who did that looting and where those pieces went and how they've been used, and they're in private collections all over the world with the elites. And it's just awful. And it reminds me of this Kushner thing with Qatar. Because Kushner can't get the $500 million loan from Qatar, so he's going to become a hardliner in Qatar, and he has the president's ear. And what does that mean?
Yeah, there's some great reporting on that over at TheIntercept.com, by the way. Excellent point, Scott. Thank
you. You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
And the situation with Qatar is very, very troubling. Here you've got a country that is hosting U.S. Central Command, and yet Jared Kushner and friends are crashing it. And welcome back. Anthony, watching us on YouTube in Medford, Mass. Hey, Anthony, what's on your mind today?
Hi. I wanted to kind of shift gears a little bit from what the topics have been thus far. On the DCCC's website, they have four different slogans that people can vote on for the 2018 midterms. And my point with all of this is just they're all like ridiculous to the point of self-parody. Like, I thought it was a poll or a troll or something when I first saw it, and I'm like, holy crap, this is like actually what they're putting out. And the third option they give in particular, like, it literally says Democrats 2018. I mean, have you seen the other guys? And right. To me, that's just kind of a,
I'm on their website, right? I'm sitting on their website right now, Anthony. How do I find this?
I can give you,
I'm at DCCC.org.
The link is, action.dccc.org. /fun/July-sticker.
Okay. No, that's not getting me. Huh. DCC, visit the action.
Yeah, like, if you just Google.
Yeah, I'll have to track it down. Anyhow, your point. What was the point that you were going to?
Yeah, my point was the third option in particular. Like I said, it says Democrats 2018. I mean, have you seen the other guys? That's literally what it says. And to me, that's just...
Well, that was Hillary Clinton's campaign slogan. I mean, it wasn't said that way, but it was, you know, the children are watching. Donald Trump is a creep. Don't vote for him.
Right. And that's what I'm saying is, like, that particular option, it's like that particular, like, slogan option, it's a microcosm of the Democrats in their current form. And the fact that, you know, like, the ridiculous slogans that are up for vote being what they are, it boggles my mind. Someone signed off on this. Someone thought this was a good idea. And the only conclusion I can come to is just that they don't care anymore.
I don't know. I mean, you know, when I first heard that the Democratic Party was proposing, have you seen the other guy, as a campaign slogan, I assumed it was from The Onion. That Andy Borowitz had been writing something.
Yeah, any rational person would think that, right?
Yeah, you would think. I'm still trying to find this. Give me the... Okay, so I'm at action.dccc, action.dccc.org/what?
It's action.dccc.org /fun/July-sticker.
I got a 404 error. Are any of those capitalized?
like I said, I found it just by Googling DCCC slogan.
Okay, I'll have to do that. I mean, it's possible that they've taken it off their site or that they've...
Because, I mean, I'm looking at it right now.
It's, oh, you are?
As far as I know, it's still up, and I just Googled it again and clicked the same thing that comes up in my search, and it's still there. So.
Right. Huh. Have you seen the other guy? I'm the other guy. Oops, UY, trying to search for that right now. Anthony, thanks for the call. Let me dig into this, and we'll probably rant about it at more length tomorrow, but I appreciate the call. Thanks for watching us on YouTube. We'll be right back. Welcome back. Tom Harbin here with you. I'm still looking for this thing on DCCC's site. I'm not finding it. So. Anyway, Don in Lakeport, California. Hey, Don, thanks for watching Free Speech. What's up?
Well, discussion on dildos reminded me of we have one in the White House. And I think all we have to do is get everybody together and get as many dildos as we can, send them to the White House, put them in gold letters on the side, Trump. But make sure when we send them, they're the tiniest ones we can send.
Ha! Okay. Don, I'll let that stand on its own. Thank you so much for the call. Dennis in Pacific Palisades, California. Hey, Dennis, what's on your mind today? Dennis? No, Dennis. Let's try David in Chicago, listening to WCPT. Hey, David, what's on your mind today?
Tom, yes.
Hey, David.
Tried and true fan of yours, along with countless others.
Well, thank you.
Touching on yesterday's topic on Alzheimer's. My mother's been in an Alzheimer's assisted care facility for... Are you there?
I'm here. I'm listening.
My mother's been in a facility for several years now. Thus has spurred my interest with nutrition, of course, as I grew up in the food business.
Mm-hmm.
So this was a very unique, interesting analogy that I witnessed. He was a scientist slash cognitive doctor. And what he did, I believe it was on one of the PBS television stations some years ago, he took a culinary torch, put the sugar on top of the creme brulee, torched the creme brulee, and just simply stated, this is your brain on sugar and how it crystallizes.
Mm.
So, you know, I'm of the school of prevention, number one. And it's true, top of the list to stay away from is sugar.
Yeah.
And as we all know, not just because of all Alzheimer's and cognitive issues, for everything. I mean, we're just being bombarded with sugar, as you and I are well aware of, on a daily basis. So we just have to stay away from sugar to keep these maladies at bay. And I teach senior fitness for years. I've witnessed a lot of my participants, going to early stages of dementia. But it's just an important issue. And then today, I was listening to a caller, and that's right towards the end of your conversation with her. My phone dropped out, and it was referencing homosexuality. And she had made reference to, well, it's nature's way of controlling overpopulation. Very true. When someone asked me about why are you gay? I said, well, gee, nature's way of controlling overpopulation. I said, could you imagine what the population would be if there was not homosexuality? And for those who are more religious, perhaps, they can perceive it as God's way of controlling overpopulation.
Mm.
So that's pretty much it. But,
okay. Yeah, I'm not sure I can.
I empathize what you went through with your mother.
Well, thank you, Dave.
I'm there.
Yeah, and my brother Stan really went through the most of it because he and his wife took my mom in, and I am to this day just so appreciative of my brother and what he and his wife did. It was just my sister-in-law what they did. David, thank you for the call. Jason in Addison, Illinois. Hey, Jason, what's up?
Yeah, hi. I was going to call on a different topic, and it's mainly about the Trump Jr. meeting. And I think with this meeting, I mean, everybody looks at face value, but you got to go to the details. If they didn't get anything from them, I think that proves that Russia did not collude with the Trumps. And I think there's the evidence right there, that especially if that's all they have. It's almost like they were like out there and just trying to tempt them to come and have a meeting with them, see what this is all about.
But excuse me.
Total kind of, I don't know.
What it says to me, Jason, is that Donald Trump Jr. was perfectly willing to collude with Russia or probably any other country.
Collusion, isn't that called like opposition research?
Yes, it is.
Opposition, you know what I mean? Like, this is what every politicians do.
No, I get it. And like I said, there's a piece over at the Daily Caller right now about how the Clinton campaign went to the Ukrainian embassy to get dirt on Paul Manafort, you know, to try to use against Donald Trump. This is not something that is totally bizarre. But on the other hand, my understanding, and I'm not, you know, super wise about campaign laws and things like that, but my understanding is that in general in American politics, if you're a politician running for federal office and a foreign government, particularly one that that your government may view, at least in many dimensions, as an adversary, if a foreign government contacts you and says, we've got something that's going to help you, you don't say, great, I'll take it. You say, let me call the FBI. It seems to me that this indicates, you know, I don't think that this is the thing that's going to take anybody down, frankly, from everything I'm reading.
Right.
But, you know, what Mueller is up to, what he's looking at, we'll see. But you know, I will
say this: it's politically unsavory for people to do this. But there are no laws. From what I saw last night, there are no laws from going to getting your opposition research from foreigners,
right?
Not necessarily foreign governments, but
it's not just opposition research. We've got people in both political parties right now, but particularly Republicans, who are getting money from overseas as well, from other foreign countries and foreign nationals. And the Supreme Court kicked the door open to this with Citizens United. In fact, it was the thing that in Stevens's rebuttal, his dissent in Citizens United, he talked about Tokyo Rose. He said, under this decision, Tokyo Rose, the woman who was the propaganda, voice of Japan during World War II, that she could own a politician in the United States. She wouldn't have to just, sing her songs to the GIs. I'm hopeful that this provokes a meaningful and consequential discussion in the United States about involvement of other countries in our elections, about involvement by the United States in other countries' elections, and perhaps even an international discussion about what's appropriate and where the boundaries are and where do we draw the lines. Jason, thanks for the call, and thanks for listening to WCPT. It's been a fascinating day today. Thanks so much for being with us, and we will be back tomorrow. This college story, I think, is one of the most underreported. This is just absolutely shocking to me, that Republicans have gone from 56% support for going to college to 36% support for going to college in a year and a half. Just because of the Trump presidency. That's mind-blowing. Anyhow, we'll talk about that and more tomorrow. In the meantime, don't forget, democracy is not a spectator sport. Get out there, get active, tag, you're it. See you tomorrow.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, visit tomhartman.com.